This is Felt Recoil.
Hey, hey, welcome to the Felt Recoil Podcast. This is episode number 103, which is perfect because to my right is the man himself, which I'll do all the introductions here in just a second. But 103 is significant. I'll tell you why in just a second. This is the Felt Recoil Podcast. We are your home for raw opinion, unfiltered reviews, and the latest news with new episodes every Tuesday morning, wherever you get your podcast. So glad to have you here. Make sure you find us at feltrecoilshow.com. We've linked to all of our socials there. So if you want to follow us on Twitter or Instagram, or you find our YouTube channel there as well, be glad to have you follow us along. Plus, every episode of the podcast ever released is there, as well as the blog. That's feltrecoilshow.com. My name is Chris, and this week, to my right, and here's what happened. The main man, Stump, is here. How are you, sir?
Doing well.
Here's what happens. Last week, across from me, Micah Zimmer. How are you, sir?
Doing well, sir. Thanks for having me.
Micah comes in for his first episode with us, kind of gets the introduction. Micah's going to be helping with some video content and the blogging and things of that nature. On the feltrecoilshow.com side, helping build the webpage, make this a little bit bigger than it already is. So we're excited to have him help us. But then I get a text from Stump, and he basically says, I'm pretty sure I hold the record at 2 guest appearances, and if Micah's back next week, my record is smashed, so I must come in for a third so I stay ahead of the game.
I don't hold very many things near and dear to my heart, but this is one of them.
Not even my child.
Nope.
I appreciate my last minute notice to this as well.
No, I'm kidding. Here we are. In fact, none of that was true except for the fact that you still do actually hold the record. It would be 3 guest appearances. I don't think we've ever had more. Chris Harrell has been on twice, which would have made you a tie. But this will put you in the lead. Nice segue.
Cha-ching.
To talk about Bubba Wallace, which, let me just say at the outset, before I get to our charity of choice for the week, I will call him Bubba Watson all night, because that's the only Bubba in professional sports that I know. Also, I've learned recently, I'm a racist because I'm white. See, I watch the news, so I know these things now. We'll dive into all of it. But you have actual racing experience. Out at the speed track. You got a bunch of trophies.
Yeah.
You've done a lot of good things on the track in your time. So if I have a racing question, you're the guy I come to for that. You're my man.
That's accurate.
You love some NASCAR.
I do.
The Confederate States and Bush Light, all those things. No?
Sure.
I'm stereotyping. See, now it's funny. I'll get into it in a minute. Let me not get too far off. All right, so Stump's here. Thanks, man. Really, seriously, thank you for doing this. We record this Monday nights, late night in my home office, and I know it's not easy to get away from everything, and we'll talk about everything going on here in just a second. First, I do want to mention this week's charity of choice, persecution.com, the voice of the martyrs. You want to hear what persecution really is? You want to read about people in China who are being slaughtered because they're Muslims? You want to know what it's like to actually live under a regime that hates you because of you? Visit persecution.com. They'll take your money. You should donate some to them. You really should, because they're out there doing God's work for people that need it. Not a bunch of whiners in a garage somewhere making millions of dollars to drive a car in a big circle. These are real people actually being persecuted, and they deserve your attention. So persecution.com, read up on some actual people who need actual help, not professional athletes who want to whine and cry over their manufactured oppression. I ruin it. Nobody's going to donate to that charity because I get mad as I talk about it, but that's how I feel. Okay, persecution.com. Stump, I got 2 housekeeping things. A, prayers to your dad.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I'll say, unless you want to say more. But we love the guy. He is such a nice guy, and he'll be okay, and we're happy to hear that.
Appreciate it.
Number 2, I need to make sure that your wife doesn't hate me, because not so long ago, COVID hits, and I kind of lost my temper for an hour and recorded an episode where afterwards, honest to God, I mean this sincerely, honest to God, you and your wife were the first people I thought about, because I do this whole thing about who are doctors and nurses to say they're heroes. And I... you know, kind of like if you guys remember the John Correa experience with active self-protection. Do you remember this? So he's the guy, he's a gun instructor, sort of. He's a YouTuber more than anything, but a preacher as well. And he's done some really good work in his life, and I think he's a fantastic guy. Seems like a really nice man. But he went and took a knee when Kaepernick first started taking a knee, like 2-3 years ago. And he made a public display out of, you know, I'm a Navy vet and I'll take a knee. And I took issue with that because I think he's wrong. I don't think it's fair to call America a racist country. And anyway, my point is, he heard what I had to say about it and that I was unhappy about it. But I don't think he actually heard what I said. Right. So, and by that, I mean, literally, I think someone messaged him and said, hey, you know, they talked about you after you went on their show and they're not happy at all. So he sent me some heated messages and I sent back and said, man, I said at the top, I respect you. I love what you do. I think you're wrong on this. And there's no need to get him on the phone and go back and forth, in my opinion. You know, I'm going to have my opinion. He's going to have his. We're obviously not going to agree. Anyway, I thought of you and your wife because I'm going off on you're not a hero when you're charging $45 for Advil. And now I feel like maybe that's a little callous because I know there are good people that do good work. Is your wife mad at me, I guess, is the long-winded question.
She is more upset with you about calling her out on her gas tank. And now taking that public ridicule to a whole new level, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
That is
my new agenda, is for everybody we know to shame her for not putting gas in her vehicle.
But do you know that that is a plight all men face? We all – listen, we can have a nine-hour road trip ahead of us, and my wife will say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to run the store. I'll get those last few things we need for tomorrow, and I'll be back. And we will all pile in the car to head to Orlando for Disney the next morning, and that needle will just be burying the E 6 feet.
Well, that's another thing, is we're taking the Great American Road Trip for our one of our really good friends who actually listens to this show's gender reveal in Louisiana. And she said, I want to go on a road trip. We've never been on a road trip. Well, we've been on the road together plenty of times. She's never made it past Powdersville on the way to Atlanta without being asleep. So I'm going to drive through the heartland, and she'll wake up when we get to Biloxi.
You must be a good driver. Because I can't sleep with other people driving the car. I'm always terrified.
I don't like riding with other people. No. Not for a long distance. Yeah. No.
I'll drive 12 hours.
No, but she's not mad at you about the aspirin thing. She knows if we. I know. I've met a few nurses.
So the community knows to a degree.
The community knows it's there. You have your nurses who are your fun nurses,
right?
And then you have the nurses that people kind of make fun of, that, you know, the mean girls that they were the mean girls in high school and the pretty girls in high school, and you can just walk up to them and crush them and just say, how's nursing going? Because that's what they all did. But April comes from a long line of healthcare workers, so I'm not going home. Yeah. I'm staying here with you tonight. But no, there are some nurses who think that they are, you know, Meredith Grey, House MD, George Clooney from ER. They are there, and they are not that.
It's funny, when I watch a show like House and those things, I have trouble. I can't suspend disbelief. It doesn't work for me. That's why, like comic book movies, they're not entertaining to me, because the premise is false, in my opinion. You know, as soon as we start, I'm like, unless it's Batman. Batman, I give credit to, because that could happen.
Yeah.
See, that Batman is believable. It could be a thing. Anyway. Whenever I watch those shows like House, I always think, I could never work for that guy. Like, who would want to work for a guy in that environment? Like, he really is mean to everyone around him, and life is only so short. Get out quick. Yeah. Anyway.
And in her profession, she runs across people who think that they are...
That they're that guy.
Yeah, they make the dramatic gestures and the, do this now. But also, when you talk about TV shows, you can't watch those TV shows with somebody that works in healthcare, because they're like, they didn't do that right. That's wrong. That person would be dead right now. And I was like, well, you know what? Let's just cut this off. We can watch Friday for the 55th time this month, and we'll go about our day.
She's like, they really don't let you kiss them after the beep starts. Hey, stop. The man's dead. Yeah, but they wouldn't let her kiss him. That's fake. I guess gun guys are probably that way a lot for their wives, right? Like, oh, that guy just died. Anyway, okay. I wanted to clear the air because I did feel a little bit bad, but not a lot of bad, but a little bit bad.
Honey, fill your car up.
Because my point was, to be very clear, my point before, she's going to go back and listen now, so I have to like give my preface. My point was, heroes don't demand the label, right? Like,
right.
Stop it. Stop acting like, I mean, we've seen your TikTok, right? Like, you're not all on the COVID floor. Some of you are being furloughed because there's no work to do.
Yeah.
They don't furlough guys in Afghanistan.
If she sees, like, the nurse logo or somebody wears right. the shirt she's on Facebook, like, right. my name is Melanie, I'm a nurse, and I'm proud.
I got you.
We laugh hysterically.
It's like adults.
Those people.
It's like, adults that demand a celebration on Father's and Mother's Day. You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay, I'll see you later.
But it's at the same degree in a sense, right? Like, can you imagine? Everyone needs to acknowledge, I'm dad. Yeah, you are. You made the problem. Fix it, right?
Like,
right. we don't have to go around and celebrate you all of a sudden. All right, cool. We wasted enough time. Was there one other thing before we get to Bubba Wallace? No, I think we got it all. Okay. Bubba Wallace, as far as I know, and here's a funny thing. And by the way, if you guys, when I start talking, if either of you for professional reasons want to step in and go, I just want y'all to know I don't agree with this opinion, the rest of us will go, okay, sure, no problem, okay? You feel free. That little disclaimer that they do, you know, on the paid advertisements. But you know what's funny about Bubba Wallace to me is he's mixed race, right?
Yes.
Okay, he's biracial. But he gets the credit as being the first black guy to do something. Right?
Right.
No. Yeah. Obama got that credit too. Like, he's the world's first black president. Is he not the first in NASCAR? Okay, so I misread then.
Wendell Scott was the first black man in NASCAR.
Okay.
NASCAR as an institution is, people accuse the NFL, NBA, MLB of their games being rigged. NASCAR is the biggest, short of the WWE, controlled organization. Really?
Oh, yes. Hold on. Break this down then. Did you know this, Micah?
No, this should be interesting. Okay.
So in 2013, when...
There was a cage match.
yeah, sort of. Danica Patrick.
Okay.
We can roll into this one.
Yeah.
Danica Patrick... Well, let me back up. Jeremy Clements, he is a local driver. He's from Spartanburg. He races in the second tier series. Okay. He was accused of calling somebody a racial slur. And it came about 3 months after he went on when podcasts were first starting to heat up.
Right.
When you go get your stuff at a Daytona or a Talladega, you're given a restrictor plate to put in your motor that it cuts out the airflow and fuel intake that will cut your horsepower down. That way the cars aren't going 240 miles an hour in a circle.
I don't know if we've met.
Yeah.
But that was like Greek for a quick minute.
Yeah.
Tell me what you just said.
It's a piece of metal with holes in it that slows a race car down.
Why?
Because if they didn't, they would run about 250 miles an hour around through
Perfect.
There with the wind. But for safety reasons, they don't.
Well, so it doesn't fly off.
Just...
into the stands and kill everybody.
Right. Yeah. And Danica Patrick's first full year of Sprint Cup or NASCAR Cup racing, I don't know what they call it anymore.
Right.
She goes to Daytona.
Okay.
And qualifies and sits on the pole. No pun intended.
I didn't even make the connection until you brought it up. Well done.
He is behind her in line to get, because she raced two races, he races one. He sees her restrictor plate, and her holes are much bigger than everybody else's.
So she can go faster.
She can go faster. She wins the pole, first woman on the pole for the Daytona 500. History's made.
Publicity.
Austin Dillon drives the number three car now, Dale Earnhardt's car.
Oh, no
His kidding. First year in the Cup Series. Qualifies on the pole at Daytona. There's a trend here.
Yeah.
It's a trend that keeps happening.
I have to say that I remember, and you tell me if I'm way out of line here, but I remember when Junior won after his dad died on the track. Like, the next year, it's his first win there. He comes back and wins it. Now, was that part of this?
It doesn't.
Or was that?
I wouldn't say that about Junior, because it's so hard to do it during a race.
Is it because he's your favorite wrestler? Or just, you just think, no?
I wasn't ever a really big Dale Junior fan.
Okay.
But he... In a race, it doesn't really matter because you're following behind. He won that race. It was pretty legit. But there's a few instances through NASCAR's history where people that are a little bit into it, they're kind of like, well, this was a little bit shady. And that Danica Patrick thing, when he started talking about it, he mysteriously said, well, you're suspended. We can't suspend you for telling the truth. You said a racial slur. You can't come back.
Oh, no kidding. And so he's never been back? What was that guy's name?
Well, he went through the sensitivity training and everything else.
Of course.
And now he's back, and he's won a race. They're based out of Spartanburg. He's a really nice guy.
And his name was what?
Jeremy Clements.
Okay. I was going to love it if you were like, and now Jeremy, he goes around and ties the pool ropes in all the garages.
Right.
It's his job now.
Right. But Kyle Larson did the same thing over Twitch during the middle of isolation or quarantine.
Yeah, he got dumped.
And he didn't fare. He wasn't as lucky as Jeremy Clements.
Now, was he citing song lyrics? What was his thing? He was
talking to a buddy, and when you get on that program, it's everybody in the race can talk to each other, kind of like we're talking here through microphones. It's the setup they have, but you can flip over to a private channel with your buddies, kind of like an Xbox party chat.
Yeah.
And when he did that, he said what he said, and the first guy on there was like, "Hey, man. Just so you know, we all heard that." And then one of the other big guys in NASCAR went, Then it just unrolled from there.
Isn't it funny? Like, we were talking about this at work the other day. Is everybody aware of the fact that Dave Chappelle is on the record as saying he walked away from his show in large part because he got tired of white people telling him his own material and using that word? Right. Haven't we reached kind of a point of an absurd double standard here? Like, I don't agree with the usage of the word. But I also don't agree with the usage of the word, right? Like, you can't define things based on I'm allowed to do it because of the color of my skin, but you're not allowed to do it because of the color of your skin, right? I think, well, before I get too deep into how I feel about racial issues in America, that anybody cares. So walk us through Bubba Wallace. Who is he? Why is he important? And the pool rope thing, legitimate? Was there cause for concern? Who is he? Why is that important?
So, Bubba Wallace, he started, I know his K&N, which is the lowest level of touring NASCAR you can do, it's a development program, was in 2010 when I was still racing at Greenville Pickens. He was on, my dad hosted the radio show, and he was talking because we knew his race team's director, and my dad actually bought him a pair of racing gloves he liked because he was just a good guy.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
He's a great guy.
Gotcha.
But the pool rope thing is interesting because his team, he drives for Richard Petty.
Right.
And they are not a
Who is still alive.
Still alive.
That is amazing. I mean, he's like a walking skeleton.
Oh, he's a bag of bones.
He is Skeletor out there with a cowboy hat.
Yeah. He had a pretty decent race car team in the 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
But now everybody's aligned together. There's four or five major players. And they are a subsidiary of that one team of Richard Childress Racing. So they run on scraps.
Oh, really?
Yes. They're not a very high, big income. With McDonald's dropping Kyle Larson for his antics, it's been the biggest thing to happen to them in forever because they will get that now that they have Bubba Wallace. As long as they have Bubba Wallace now, they have financial backing.
Sure.
But with the pool rope thing, my thing about it is...
Now, real quick, from the images I've seen of the pool rope, is that a normal way to tie a pool rope?
I've never spent... For me, if I'm putting a pool rope up, it's going to be a rope, it's going to hang there, and it's not going to have a loop on it for me to grab, because I could just grab it. To me, it was fashioned like a noose, but if you were going to try to hang a Cabbage Patch doll...
Right.
I mean, I don't. But
so have you ever seen racers tie a pool rope like that, or no?
No.
Okay.
But the thing is, I don't think he had access to the garage because with their quarantine, they drive to the racetrack that day or the night before, stay in a hotel. Now that they're traveling a little bit of distance, they have to stay in their car until about 45 minutes before race time. Then they go to their hauler, which is. No, they don't go in their garage because they don't want to be anywhere near where a big congregation of people have been. So he goes out, and then it rains, and NASCAR tells him about it, and then did he leak it? Did he say, hey, they found a noose in my garage way too early? Absolutely, he did.
I got you.
He stirred up a lot of trouble, but I don't think that it was deliberately done, to, contrary to a lot of popular belief, because a lot of NASCAR diehard fans are...
They got to be angry.
They are very angry.
Because he fought for the Confederate flag to be removed from everything. Is that correct?
Yeah, he just wanted it removed. You know, that was a stance he took, but like I've said before, and this isn't a popular stance, if I see an 18-year-old kid flying a Confederate flag off the back of his squatted truck...
Right. Yeah, you know what he's thinking.
Yeah, that's sure. Antagonizing. The same thing for kids that aren't old enough to vote to fly their Trump 2020 flags off the thing. It's kind of antagonizing, which, makes you know, sense.
Can be.
They can, that's their right to do so.
Right.
But going to a NASCAR race, it's kind of something I want to touch on. The outside of a NASCAR race, certain spots, is not a great place to be if you are personal color. I mean,
sure.
We went to it wasn't a NASCAR race, but the race was the next weekend, so all the vendors had already set up when Virginia Tech played Tennessee at Bristol. It was the biggest football game ever. So all the vendors are still set up like it's a race because that's how they make their money for the year. A guy was there selling flags. He had a Confederate flag and a Knights of the Ku Klux Klan flag at Bristol daylight. And even my wife was like, Dylan, what have you drug me to?
This is
a football game. This isn't even the race.
Jeez.
And, you know, you go to Charlotte, it's okay. You go to Bristol, it gets a little hairy. It's a little different brand of people up there.
Yeah.
But some of these places are rough. That Talladega infield is very rough. It's a fun place to be, but it can be kind of rough.
Yeah, it's out in the middle of nowhere.
And these people are there on a 7-day bender. They get there on Monday. There's not even cars on the track. They start partying, and they party all the way till they roll out the next Monday.
That's crazy.
And it gets a little thick down there.
I can empathize in a way, because I once went to an Outkast concert in Columbia, South Carolina. True story. As like the sole crazy white guy in the crowd. But my experience with that stuff has always been, like, I went to a friend's wedding, a black friend who got married in a black church. We were one of the few white people there. The Outkast concert was one where they were kind of in their heyday. It was prior to like the Hey Ma days. This was like early Outkast. Everybody was listening to Sorry Miss Jackson Outkast. And it was in the middle of the city in Columbia, and we went down there, and it was like a madhouse. It was just, you know, I worked in the Vista in Columbia, and that's where the concert was. So I remember us basically, well, it wasn't in the Vista. It was close enough at the park that we all kind of trekked over there and met at work, parked our cars, and then walked. And it was a madhouse. Like it was just pandemonium, not in any like raunchy or weird way, or no fights or anything. But just the vibe and the culture of the people there, like they just dance in a way white people can't dance, you know,
right.
And they're just having the best time. But my point is, I always just felt welcomed. Like, seriously, like they look at you like, well, he's got something on him. Like, meaning, you know, he's here. There's a reason he's here. Might as well accept him.
Right.
And it was always a good time. Like, I've never felt... Like, obviously, you feel out of place when you're surrounded by people who look nothing like you and who, you know, live nothing like you live. And you're from two totally different worlds. They know that. I know that. They get it. Not that one's better or worse than the other. But there's just always something fun to that experience for me.
Right.
But I can see how, and I'm kind of tongue-in-cheek there being empathetic. I can see, though, how if you went in and it was any way, you know, what's the word? Confrontational, you wouldn't want to.
Well,
be
NASCAR there. Still has a bad stigma from the, you know, mid 80s, 90s, when it was at NASCAR's, you know, you could get 100, you know, there was 100,000 people at a racetrack. That doesn't happen anymore. But yeah, that used to be really, really rough to go to back in the day.
So do you think there was legitimacy to Wallace's gripe?
I think there was some. I mean, I think it could welcome a whole new demographic to a sport that needs. Desperately
fresh blood
to come in, and
gotcha.
It's fresh blood that's going to drive old blood out, but it's not a necessarily a bad thing. It's not the old school days where you could go buy a car off the lot, put a roll cage in it, and go race anymore. It's a commercialized sport, like Formula One, like IndyCar. It's a big money organization now, and you can't get Joe Blow from Greenville Pickens to go out there and drive a cup car and be successful anymore. You just can't do it. Okay. And people don't like that. Sure. If you don't have $1-3 million worth of sponsorship, it's kind of like where IndyCar is. You don't have a ride. You could be the best race car driver in the world, but if somebody comes in, say, like there's a guy that used to race, his name's Paul Menard. His father owned the Menards chain stores. Mm-hmm. He had a ride for 20 years just on his name. He wasn't really any good. He won at Indy one time, but and there's a lot of people more deserving, but it's about bucks now. But viewership's going down, and it's a tough time for that sport, and they have to do everything they can. But I've been to a lot of NASCAR races, and I can – it's not a vibe if I was somebody like – if I was in those shoes, I wouldn't say, this is the first place I want to go is a NASCAR race. Sure, right. There's going to be people there that are welcoming. I mean, not everybody that goes to a NASCAR race is just racist piece of crap. Because I'm there anytime they're within 200 miles.
I wouldn't take it that way. I think what you're saying, and it's kind of the same reason I avoid large crowd gatherings in the first place. Like if it's not a concert, Mike, are you a sports guy? Do you go to sporting events all that often?
I do a lot of college football.
Okay. See, I that would be top on my list to not go to because I can't take the Clemson drunken fans. Confrontation. Well, yeah, with the Clemson fans of the world. I'll tell you this. I've told this story, I'm sure, many times on this podcast. But a great example would be I went to a couple of college football games when I lived in Columbia. All right, so we went and watched the Gamecocks play a few times. I couldn't ever get over like the large crowd. Everybody's out of control. There's always a couple of dudes in the corner looking to fight somebody, you know? And so I just don't go to sporting events because they kind of make me have the heebie-jeebies right off the bat. I don't like the large crowds anyway because I feel like somehow I'm always magnetized and I end up next to the dude that wants to go fisticuffs with somebody. And there's just something about the way I look where I'm like that dude. I feel like I'm always the guy that then they bow up on me, you know, what you got? And a great example would be I was at a guy's house for a Clemson Carolina game one year. And Carolina started spanking Clemson hard. Like, it was a bad beat. Like, it was one of the years, you know, we had Clowney and all those guys. Oh, yeah. And we were just creaming Clemson. Now, I'm not a huge sports guy. In fact, one of my favorite memories from where Stump and I worked together was one day I just started making stuff up about Carolina and Clemson. Like, legit, this guy was wearing Clemson apparel at work. And I was like, oh, yeah, well, that's great, man. I mean, we still have more national titles than you guys, but that's cool. And he's like, what are you even talking about? And I was like, well, I mean, we haven't won football, but if you look at every other intercollegiate sport, yeah, we have more than you do. He was like, what? Now, mind you, I have no clue, and nor do I care, right? I don't care. And I just start making up. Well, then he got legitimately offended. Like I had said his religion was fake, which if it wasn't Jesus, it is. But the point is, I didn't say anything about that. I was just talking sports. And then he went so off the handle that then I just was like, well, double or nothing, right? So then I'm diving in and I'm just goading this guy. And he got so mad and I ended up, you know, going off to do whatever. And I come back around. He's still steaming. Like he's telling people around him, you know, the things I'm saying. And I came back. I was like, hey, you know, I made all that up, right? Like I hate sports. I don't care about sports. He's like, I knew you were messing with me. Obviously not, right? Right. Obviously not. So it's those guys. I was at the house. Clemson starts losing terribly. I don't care about sports that much, but you know we're there to watch, and I'm cheering for Carolina. And I kid you not, this dude lost his mind. He lived there. It was his house we're in. He lost his mind to such a degree that he grabbed a baseball bat, and he beat a wicker hamper on his fireplace just to smithereens. His child, who was like 3 or 4 at the time, is standing there watching the drunk father beat the wicker basket over a football game. And I remember thinking in my head, if he's this out of control over sports, how must he treat these children when nobody's here? Like, seriously, swear to God, you have kids now. I mean, when you get surrounded by multiple demons and they're working in coordination, no, but seriously, it is taxing as an individual. And so my point is, I couldn't help but think, what must their life be like when no, if this is how you take sports. So that's, I guess all I'm saying is that's kind of my barometer on sports. Like if you take sports really, really, like I don't mind loving it. I don't mind people having a passion for sports because there's good things to be had from sports. I think it can be healthy. But if it affects you to that degree, when nothing in the real world is affected the next day, everything else spins the same direction, goes on, right? There's always that little something where I think if it's affecting you that negatively, there's a deeper issue, yeah. Right? So I avoid, I guess my whole point there was I kind of avoid those events anyway, but.
Yeah, I just don't, there's just a pedigree. I don't understand. People are, a lot of my people on Facebook are, I'll never watch another NASCAR race again. This is stupid, yada, yada, yada. It's like, well, why?
Right.
It's like all those people that burn their NFL jerseys and then right. say they're never going to watch the NFL again. I'm like,
right.
here they are.
And here we are four years later.
When the Panthers released Cam Newton, I said, I'm never going to watch another Panthers game again. And now that all this is going on, I cannot wait for it to start back up. And I'll just.
You need something to do.
Here's my thing. If you get fired from the Carolina Panthers, you should just end your NFL career right there.
Yes, you should.
So let's back up. The Confederate flag is the issue for NASCAR fans now. Are they exiting because they took the flag away?
We're going to ban the flag. They all started, the old school fans were, a lot of them are, well, you ain't going, you know, this is my heritage. Well, sure. There's a lot of things that lasted longer than the Confederacy. There's actually a Twitter that is just all based on things that have lasted longer than the Confederacy.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Like the show Gossip Girl lasted longer than the Confederacy. I mean, there's, you know, I understand it's your heritage, and you know, I really don't want to upset anybody that might be listening to this, but I don't care because
right. It's a weird heritage to celebrate.
I know a lot of people, I'm a South Carolina fan and I'm a big Furman sports supporter. I still fly Furman and Carolina flags, even though we lost, but you know, it's different.
Yeah. You didn't separate from every other college team in order to oppress people.
Right. Yeah. And you know, stop celebrating a war you lost.
Oh man.
I'm sorry. Wow. Don't mean to offend.
Don't say that to the Vietnam vets. Yeah.
But I mean, I got in a legit Facebook argument with a girl the other day.
That's your first problem.
Yes. She said her solution to everything in the country that's going on is that we needed to have a civil war again. Wow. We needed round two. We should do it again. Oh, and my one point to her that didn't shut her up, but kind of deflated her argument is, people down here cannot drive in 2 inches of snow. The South is not going to do it again. It's not going to happen. And she said, well, what if we just went liberals versus conservatives? I was like, game on. Let's go. Why not? But it's just that level of mentality. Just some people just get so wrapped up in this, you know, it's my right. I can do it. Well, you know, if it's your right, I mean, you have a right to do a lot of things. Technically, the law still says you can beat your wife on the courthouse steps on Sunday, but I'm not dragging my wife down there for not putting gas in her car.
You should
put gas in your car.
Hint, hint, wink, wink.
I'm not doing it, but you know that's just where I get hung up on it. It's because I am a very big fan of the sport, but the Confederate flag being out there, it is a deterrent. I mean, if it doesn't,
I got you.
If you don't, I wouldn't feel comfortable walking into a Black Panther rally. I mean, if I saw their flag, I'm going to the other end of the track. I'm going to go to the other tailgate.
That's right.
You know, where they're having the barbecue and we're all having a good time, not where we're being serious. And that's what, I mean, to some people, that's what they see it as. And I work with a guy who tells a story of a friend of his, super nice guy. He just passed away, God rest him. And he just was where he was born and raised. He had just a fear of going around white people.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't do it. And we had people that tried, and he finally warmed up to them because he realized that, you know, not everybody was bad, but they went to a place one night, Confederate flag. He got out of the car. He said, I'll be right back. I got to pee. He tore down the road. They found him 10 miles later. He said, I ain't going over there to their house, boss. It was one of those things. Yeah, you know? But if you can take something away that will make more people welcome to help sustain what you love, why not do it?
Sure.
And that's my whole stance on it, wrapped up.
Micah, where are you at on the Confederate flag?
I think, you know, I agree with you. If it's just going to be a deterrent, then, you know, I mean, sports are, any sport is designed to bring people together. you know, there's always a greater cause with any sport. But, you know, I mean, the Confederate flag, no matter what side you're on, I mean, yeah, just, I mean,
there is an easy way. It's,
right. And there, I don't feel like there's a right or wrong answer to this. But if it's causing so, if it's taken away from the whole reason of being together and,
right,
and having the sport and enjoying it, then yeah, maybe it shouldn't be there.
What do you think of when you see it? Like, honestly, just off the cuff, there's no right or wrong answer. I'm just curious, yeah, what your impression is.
I mean,
because I think this is where it varies for everybody.
I think that, you know, obviously it brings you back to the Civil War, you know, it brings you back to, you know, and yeah, sometimes there is a certain stereotype that comes directly to mind when,
yeah,
I see the Confederate flag. Oh, so,
just to be clear, you can still make fun of old white men. Oh, nobody will be canceled for making fun of any white Anglo-Saxon Protestant.
Are you going to cancel me from this show?
Absolutely not. No, I'm in full agreement. Like, I don't understand the Confederate flag, and I'm not for tearing it down. By the way, am I for a private business like NASCAR being able to tell you can't bring it in? Yeah, absolutely. You should be allowed to do that. Just like you shouldn't have to make the cake, right? You shouldn't have to make their cake. If you don't make the cake, you don't make the cake. Then go somewhere else and get their cake. NASCAR wants to tell you not to fly a flag. Don't fly the flag, right? It's a free market, right?
Right.
If there's enough demand for people to behave in a certain way, the dollars will speak that way, and you can handle it. My impression of the Confederate flag nearly my entire life was that it represented a country that lost a war. And that was the beginning and the end of it for me. You get a little older, you might read a little bit, you might decide other things, but on its face, beginning and end for me, it was always, oh yeah, that was, they tried to be a different country, and then they got walloped. And here we are. Luckily, we saved the Union, right? Was there some nefarious things done to save the Union? You betcha. You betcha, right? They suspended due process and habeas corpus and all that. Right or wrong? We can argue that. I'd say wrong, right? Like, I don't know if the president has his powers, but my point is, nor should he. But my point is, you had a contingency of people who wanted to be their own country. And in so doing, you have to go to war to defend that. And they didn't win the war, and they just seem bitter and resentful.
Well, another point I have on it, too, is the same – you, it's going to sound really bad. Don't take any offense if you do.
Get the beep button ready.
Get the beep button ready.
Do we have one?
A lot of people that I know are college football fans. I will use Clemson fans because we're closer to Clemson. I've been to Clemson a few times. I've never seen – a Confederate flag fly, right, at a college football game.
I will agree with that.
I've never seen one fly.
Because they're all farmers,
right? Right.
You would think,
right?
Out there,
they
in the
love
sticks.
Cattle. Get a degree in grass cutting. I'm done.
Spend $60,000 on
you. You don't see it at college football games. You're definitely not going to see it at an NFL game. You're right. For sure not going to see it at an NBA game. And if you see it at a hockey game, call me because I want to see it myself.
Right. Yeah.
But why at this sport? Why is this such a big deal for this sport? And that's just the stain, well, that's been the stigmatism that's been, sure, put on it as good old boys, rednecks, and Bush Light.
But isn't that what NASCAR is? Like, no offense, but NASCAR's history is in running moonshine, right?
Running moonshine, I mean, right.
Of course. Like, they're rebels. They were felons at the time, and that's how the sport was invented. And that's a really cool, gritty history to have. But you do kind of have to evolve beyond, right, that. Like you said, you move into a new era and usher fresh breath and blood in.
Once upon a time, basketball was a bunch of lily white men with no 3-point,
right,
line that couldn't dunk either. And
Pete Maravich, rest in peace.
Yeah. Look what,
Pistol
we've,
Pete.
Look what we've rolled into now. It's the most, I, yeah, mean, lucrative sport out there besides baseball.
And it's a funny thing. I was at lunch on Friday, and the NFL came on. And they're apologizing to black men. And I thought, who has made more millionaires? We talked about this last week.
Yeah,
who has made more millionaires,
right,
out of black people than the NFL and the NBA? Who?
Right.
Nobody. No company in the world has made more millionaires out of black men, especially, and I don't say this offensively at all. I mean this sincerely, especially uneducated black men. Right?
Right.
So, I mean, you can drop out of college. You don't have to go to college and be a professional athlete anymore. Look at LeBron James. He's one of the richest people in the country, and he doesn't have a college degree. Good for him. Good,
right,
for him. Learn your skill. Use your skill. Make your money, right? Start your own BET with $100 million. Fine. Go do it. Fine. I just don't understand what the gripe is against the sports complex from that side. But I do understand the gripe against the Confederate flag. And I do – you've changed my mind a little here on Bubba, because I've kind of taken him for last week as just a whiner, like this dude who was just – I'm going to whine about, I'm going to Juicy Smollett it the whole way through, you know?
No, and that's what a lot of Facebook memes and everything has been. I think it's the furthest from old Juicy.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he was in that area. Is it the furthest fetched idea for somebody from that team to
do that?
That. Hmm. Not in my mind. I mean, oh, yeah? You have the only black driver who is, he hasn't had a ton of success, but if he was in better equipment, he probably would. But he's running where he's supposed to run. He's not been a disappointment by any means. And he's really surged since all this is happening. And it's a not a great PR move, but right. It's a great PR move if you're in that spot. It
got some attention. And I mean, I agree with you right there. I mean, if it the whole flag situation, if it takes away from the whole reason, you know, the sport in and of itself, then yeah, it just doesn't need to be there. But it's like most, you know, most toddlers, when they're whining, all they want is attention.
Right.
I see the exact same thing happening right here. It's stumps all about the same attention.
Way.
Right.
Stumps the same way.
Well, the sport doesn't run in the Southeast primarily either anymore. You know, they were at Pocono for a doubleheader this weekend. They go to Watkins Glen, New York. It's one of their biggest draws. They spend 3 weeks in a row at the beginning of the year on the West Coast. This is still their bread and butter. This is right. Our market is the number one market in the country for watching NASCAR races. It has been for years, and Charlotte's number two. But they don't spend primarily. They're not in. You know, they've lost North Wilkesboro, Rockingham. Those are all racetracks that were in the grassroots of the Carolinas that are gone now, that have gone to Dover, Delaware. You know, they're just now coming back to Nashville, which isn't the South anymore.
Right, no, not even close. It's, no. It feels like, huh?
Not since Johnny Cash died.
Let's, all right. I like that that's Florida, like the cutoff point.
Or Florida Georgia Line moved in.
They killed Johnny Cash.
Once Florida Georgia Line got there, it was over.
Oh, yeah. Ain't that the truth. All right, let's take a short break. Micah, can you do me a favor? Can you pull up the St. Louis couple outside of their house? I want to talk about this before we let you go.
I already got it, sir.
Thank you. And we're going to get Stump's opinion on this. We're going to talk about how I think we're really doing an injustice.
Which source would you like, CNN or Washington Post?
One in the same. Bezos versus Turner. So both radical leftists, whichever you want. Anyway, we'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. We're going to talk about these guys and why I think we're really, really doing it the wrong way here. Be right back. Welcome back to the Felt Recoil Podcast, episode 103. Chris with you, Micah across from me. How are you, sir?
Doing well, sir.
Mr. Stump.
Fabulous.
On a NASCAR roll, my friend. Don't forget us at FeltRecoilShow.com. We'd love to have you come and find us on all the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. It's all there. Plus, every episode of the podcast that has ever existed, including our interview with Mr. Larry Vickers, can be found there. So go and thumb through those, find the highlights, and listen to them. Let's talk about the couple in St. Louis, shall we? Because I think the gun community is its own worst enemy. I don't know if anybody would agree or disagree. But we tend to kind of be like, there's a lot of those communities in the world, right, that need to stop letting people speak for them because those people do a poor job of speaking for them. In fact, the black community would probably do well to take note of that. Stop letting – and I say that. It's a funny thing that we do where we assume that these people speak for everybody. I kind of blame the media for that, right? Like they put people on TV and they say, this person is here to talk about that.
Absolutely.
There's a couple in St. Louis taking heat for guarding their home with firearms as the Black Lives Matter protesters came through their neighborhood. And before we talk about them, I want to segue over to you. How is your house, Stump? Because didn't your dog tried to burn your house down recently?
My dog.
Do you put it outside and guard it with your AR now?
I should. I should put him outside and make him just pace.
What happened with your fire?
So somebody, I'm not going to name any names, April.
Somebody who's named after a month of the year.
Yeah.
That's not March or May.
It just happens to be the fourth month.
Yeah. Left my birthday cake on the stove.
Double whammy. Yeah. She burned your house down with your birthday cake.
Yes, sir. And
there's definitely a dad joke in there.
We think my theory is,
all the candles.
is that the dog wanted him some cake and jumped up, hit the burner, and the box on fire. And my neighbor, who is a fireman, heard it.
Is it like superpower? Like, I hear a fire.
Well, he was on his way to the doctor. It was just his day off. And just a perfect storm of things going right.
Gotcha.
And said, hey, I think the neighbor's alarm's going off. And then his mom said, well, why don't you go over there and check? And he walked over there. He said, yep.
Well, I was right.
And he sent me a text. He said, hey, your smoke alarm's going off. I was like, nah. I gave it a minute. I said, hey, I'm going to open the garage up for my phone. She's going to check this out for me. He walked in there, and she was blazing. So if it had been another 5-10 minutes, we probably would be having a whole different conversation right now.
So wait, so what was the damage?
Our kitchen.
The garage was on fire too?
No, so he went into the garage, opened the door. As soon as he opened the door, smoke just rolled out. It was just the stove, and it was fixing to get the cabinets. Our cabinets got a little charred, but
my wife would be so happy if the stove caught on fire today.
He saved our house. Yeah. So I can't thank him enough.
Thank God, right?
Yeah. He is our hero. But that led into the wild, wonderful world of insurance adjusters and cleaning companies.
The cleanup? Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was going to say, what's the cleanup like on that? Pricey?
Terrific, I'm sure.
It's been pricey. Yeah. We're on our second company, and I would like to tell the tale, if we can divulge for a minute.
I would love it.
Because there's a company, and I'm not going to say their names, but it rhymes with Service Master of Spartanburg. I don't
not
care.
Not to get specific.
I don't
to
care. Get too
specific, but here's what these people did. Go ahead. We have a whole episode on Bartron Builders. So the lawsuits are already hanging, I'm sure. Go ahead.
Sue me.
Right, yeah.
The first day they sent out their guy. He was there for 4 hours drawing pictures of the rooms, taking pictures, and said, we'll have you back here in 2 weeks. We'll be done in 2 weeks. This is after the Knights people from Columbia came up and took every stitch of linen out of our house. We have been recycling the same, you know, we got to take a few shirts, a few pairs of pants, and April had a few pairs of scrubs and a few things for the kids that were just rush items, but there was a max limit on it. And plus, where we're at now, we have a very limited amount of space. Right. So we are on, I mean, I've this shirt and these jeans, they get washed every day, baby.
Yeah.
But
I was homeless once.
But yeah.
True story.
And they, the first day the cleaning people come in, we have to explain to Charlotte, our 2-year-old, hey, our house is sick. Our house is sick. Okay. These are the people in our house that are taking care of it, and we showed them on our doorbell camera.
Okay.
Well, the doorbell camera picks up if there's sound. The door's wide open. We hear, I'm not going to repeat it on here because you don't have your beep button handy.
No.
The two men talk about having relations with each other's wives.
No.
Talk about the girl that's there cleaning. Talk about taking her up to our shower and testing it out, wink, wink. Which,
no.
God, I hope they cleaned it.
But no. Wait. Were they saying they wanted to? Or
they were saying they wanted
did?
To. Okay, I don't know. I didn't put a camera up there. So,
oh my.
Ape. So,
I thought that was where your residual income came from.
Ape. People don't want to watch that, brother. Them short tapes.
Hey, man, you got to have a niche. You know what I'm saying?
So,
it's a market for everything.
So Ape says, okay. She texts me, this is unacceptable, yada, yada, yada. I was like, okay, babe.
Oh, really?
We're not,
I thought it was great.
We're not dealing with road scholars here, honey. I know that. I'm going to give them the pass on this one. 2 days later.
They're construction workers in a construction zone. Right. Honest to God. But if we distill it down to its most base, that's what's going on.
I'm a glorified construction worker, as in I don't do any construction. I'm a project manager, but...
Right. I'm a glorified construction worker.
You know,
worker.
I'm in construction. I don't do it. I'm in it. You know? You know, kind of like those videos you're talking about. I'm not in them. I watch them. I mean.
Oh, my dear.
I don't mean to digress, but 2 days later.
I just want to point out, I don't think those things were related at all. I think you just need to get that off your chest.
Yes, yes. It's a confession.
Like Ben Roethlisberger did it.
So 2 days go by. You know, the one day, don't have an incident. The next day, guy stops at our front door, pulls out a pack of Pall Malls. Packs it up. I said, oh, he's going to smoke him a cigarette out there on the stoop. Lights her up. Walks right on in the house.
No kidding.
For smoke damage. I saw it. I crossed my heart. I said, April, please don't watch this. Please don't watch this. Please don't watch this.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't 45 seconds later. My phone went off.
Yeah.
Dylan, get your to the house right, now. Right. I said, honey, we're going to fix it. We're going to fix it. So I did what I do when I need some help. I texted my mom.
Right.
So I was like, what would you do, mommy? She said, here's what we're going to do. She said, because we were at work, she had the kids, and she wanted to get the kids out of the house. She said, send me the money. I'm going to go get an indoor camera to link with your... I said, great, great idea. They can't miss the indoor camera that's sitting on the mantle in the room that they were cleaning that day.
Right.
And they go back and clean it the next day, and there's a big camera there. They'll never see it.
No.
Boy, was old Stumpy wrong.
Really?
Another day or so, the guy that was there to clean the couch for his lunch break takes a little 45-minute siesta on our couch that smells like burnt cardboard.
No kidding.
I said, you've got to be kidding me. Now, while all this is going on, they take our oven, our microwave out. Don't tell us what they're doing with it. They damage it out. When they do that, they take in our hardwood floors, which I found out were much more than I thought they were. Looks like they took a pocket knife and just drew circles like, you know, my daughter trying to write her name. So now we have to get our floors replaced. But then the guy's in there. He said, yeah, he's talking to the aforementioned woman. He said, yeah, baby, you know, I used to have a little bit of a crack problem, but I'm about recovered now. I said, bout? You're about recovered? Get out, because I'm not Jed Clampett by any means. But anybody that knows me that's listening to me knows I have a very, 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 very nice sense. And I have some pretty cool stuff just laying around. And you're in there.
Right.
I don't want you to find where the really cool stuff is, because I'm not worried about it. I forgot my mental inventory because we're starting to run out of stuff.
Right.
And I just said, oh my goodness. So I called their boss, and they luckily didn't put up too much of a fight with the floors, but I mean, just.
They paid to replace all your floors?
Well, it all linked together. It's an open floor plan. So it runs from the kitchen to the front door, into the bathroom, into the closets. And you can't match it because there's no way to match it. Right. So it all has to come out. So they hooked it up there.
If you're listening, text Stump. What?
Oh, man. George. George, I'm sorry.
What did I do? Oh, you didn't text George.
I forgot that's what George did.
We have one friend.
I have a flooring guy. I have a guy for everything.
He doesn't care. He told me recently when I tried to do business with him, you're not worth it, so don't even worry about it. Keep moving. If you're not dropping $100,000, he doesn't care.
Oh, well,
continue with your story.
Never mind.
When I get that
Jed Clampett money, George, I'll give you a shout. But I don't know. And I just felt the need to come on here and just say that is the worst experience I've ever had in my life when it comes to customer service.
That's pretty terrible. That's actually almost unbelievable, especially in, like, all right, it's such a double-edged sword as a parent, meaning – my kids want what they see the world creating. Meaning, All right. My son wants to be a YouTuber. My oldest son, big time, wants to be a YouTuber. He can't even take it how bad he wants to be a YouTuber. So when COVID hit, kind of as a, all right, buddy, well, you're going to be in lockdown. Like legit, when they were telling people don't leave your house, I went and bought like a couple $100 worth of equipment so he could record himself playing his video games, right? Well, he took it very seriously. And he actually learned how to, he's seven, and he learned how to edit his own videos, and he's putting his own little gamer stuff together, right? And I think, man, that's amazing. But the flip side of that is I tell him, I go, hey, listen to me. People are watching all the time. Everything you do will soon be documented in some way. Remember, because he's only seven, so you don't want to be too heavy with him. But I say to him, remember, everything you put out there will be consumed by somebody at some point. They'll find it, they'll see it, they'll read it, they'll think they know what you think. Point being, one of the big things I want my kids to understand, and I think it'll work well, is you can't get away with anything. Everything's on tape. Everywhere we go is on tape. There are cameras. I live on a quiet cul-de-sac by any measure of it, right? It's a nice quiet cul-de-sac. There's cameras everywhere around my house only because I want to have them. If I'm away from the house, I want to be able to see what's happening around my house. There are things inside my house, like you said, that monitor movement within the house so I can see what's happening if I happen to be away. I love the fact, by the way, and I do have a question for you about your doorbell. Are you using one where you can download the video? You can record and download.
Yeah, if you get on the website, mm-hmm. we pay for the premium. That's like $8 a month.
Yeah,
and it stores everything for 60 days. Perfect. But
because we have SimpliSafe, and with SimpliSafe, I get a ping on my phone when something motions in front of the camera, and I can immediately download that video. I get the 30 seconds before it moved and the 30 seconds after it moves direct to my phone immediately into my photos folder. And what I love about that, really, as just as dad, is that I can talk to my kids through the doorbell, right? So I'll be in my office at work. It'll ping me. I'll pick it up. I'll see the kids. Hey, what's up? Where you been? Blah, blah. But for your situation, even better. Like, hey, here it is.
I mean, we had them dead to rights. And then when it was addressed, I mean, it looked like the outside of a shady gas station on our front stoop where they started smoking outside. Just taking them.
Really?
Yeah, left cigarettes out there. It was just the worst. It's been the worst possible situation.
Are they done, or do we need to sit on this episode for 6 weeks so they can get out of your house?
Well, I probably shouldn't have said anything. Our floors are not done, but yeah. Okay.
You want me to call George? You have $100,000. He doesn't talk to you. I've walked into his office before and said, can I look at some flooring? And he says, I need a routing number, right. And I need to see today's available balance. It's true.
Yeah, we can go and let it roll because I don't care because we can, they're
okay.
Lower than pond scum.
Speaking of people that are as rich as George, let's talk about this couple. By the way, I'm very sorry that happened. I really am. I know the pain. We have an entire episode where we talk about we had a building company that we made a very terrible decision to do trade with them. My wife built their website, and they came in and offered to do some work on the house for us, and it literally took them 4 months to get this thing done, it felt like. They were supposed to paint, and a man showed up at my door, God is my witness, and told me he'd been deported at least 3 times, if not 5. So he didn't have a car. He was stuck at our front door and didn't have any paint. I said, what are you going to paint with if you don't have paint? And he goes, oh, you provide the paint. I said, no, I paid you guys to come paint. You bring the paint. And he's like, oh, no, we don't bring the paint. I was like, get out of my house. And I called my wife. I was like, call that dude and tell him that the illegal who he sent to our home is leaving. I was furious beyond belief. I'm only saying that to say I can totally, it wasn't to that degree because we got to stay in our house. So totally not really the same. But I understand what you're saying, like the shadiness of some of these people in the world.
It's wild.
It's hard to deal with. It's hard to deal with because then they live in luxury. And you're like, right. You guys are making a killing. And here's the illegal who had literally been deported, I kid you not, at least 3 times and told me if I get caught again, I go to jail. So I don't drive. Right. So I don't get caught. I was like, look where you are. Like, what is going on?
I never dealt with a company either. I didn't know these people. Like, the new company, they wear uniforms. They dress like they were going to, they were a change of shoes away from going to the golf course. Collar shirts, khaki shorts. Match. Like, they wear red one day, they wear blue one day. This other company wore a t-shirt one day. The girl wore booty shorts and a tank top. It's just been a nightmare.
What are you griping about?
All right.
If you synced her, you would gripe.
Let's, okay. Micah, I'm going to lean on you a little bit for this because I was never in the military. All right. I don't know if you know that. Don't know anything about the military. I've never been in a firefight. Never had anybody shoot at me. I've never shot back. One time in my life, I thought I'd actually use my gun. Once. And that was when my wife and I were getting gas at a gas station, and a lady came around the pump and asked me if I would pump gas for her. She was out of gas, out of money. And I said, how much do you think you need? And she said, not a lot. And I stepped around the pump. I started pumping and immediately clicked like it was full. Like, I put my credit card in and it clicked like it was full. Soon after, I started pumping. And I mean, I didn't even get a nickel's worth off. And as I was doing that, I turned and noticed there were two dudes sitting in the back of this van. And they were both looking down at the floor. And, you know, I had a gun on me, wife and kid in the van on the other side of the pump, which I had locked the doors before I stepped away. That was scary to me because the lady is sitting with her legs. This has nothing to do with this except that she's sitting there. And I go, ma'am, are you in trouble? And she said, nope. I said, are you sure? She goes, yep. And I knock on the window. I said, who are these guys? I start knocking. I said, who's in your car? And she goes, don't worry about it. I'm really sorry we bothered you. I said, nope. And I start knocking harder. Who is it? Who are you? And I'm like banging, like tempting them. Get out, right? They squeal away. We hop back in the car with my wife. I go, we're going to call the cops. We call the cops. I mean, what can they do, right? Like, hey, we're on, you know, the main thoroughfare here. We're on Highway 29. And she's scooting. And the dispatcher was like, I mean, so I gave him the plate, you know. Anyway, all that to say, I've never really, that I can remember, felt like my life was in imminent danger from people trying to take it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I want to say that at the outset because I don't want to cast much judgment on these people. I did make a snide remark about the dude flagging his wife. I do think we have to be very careful about that. But I'm not going to really sit in judgment. If you haven't seen the video, head over to FeltRecoilShow.com. Find us on Facebook. You can see it there. I'll get the lowdown. And then you've been trained in this kind of stuff. So I guess that's what I'm saying. You've seen the video. Yep. Stump, you've seen the video. Yep. All right. We've all seen it. Here's the way about this is what I love. This is a Georgia local affiliate I'm going to read this out of because this is something I didn't know. Do you guys know the marchers were headed to the mayor's house?
Hmm.
Why don't you think about that for a second? You live in the mayor's neighborhood. Here come all these people violently bursting through your gate that's locked.
Right.
Okay. So they break a gate down to get into the neighborhood in the first place. So they're trespassing. Here's how the AP reports it, according to WTOC.com. WTOC.com. A white couple, that starts, white couple, because now everything is qualified by race, just so you know.
Really?
Yep. Oh, yeah. I don't know if you know. Chicago, by the way, hasn't gotten the internal memo yet from their people. Your lives matter. Stop killing each other. I don't know if they've seen it. It's all over the news. Anyway, all right. The internal memo. Anybody?
Yeah, I got you.
It's not funny if you have to explain it. A white couple who stood outside their St. Louis mansion and pointed guns at protesters who were marching toward the mayor's home to demand her resignation. Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah, I thought I was misreading it. A white couple who stood outside their St. Louis mansion and pointed guns at protesters who were marching to the mayor's home to demand her resignation support the Black Lives Matter movement and don't want to become heroes to those who oppose their cause, their attorney said Monday. You know what? You know why that is, right? Have you seen their house? That thing's a castle. right? They don't want that thing burned down.
Right.
Video posted online showed Mark McCloskey, 63 years old, and his 61-year-old wife, Patricia, standing outside their Renaissance Palazzo-style home Sunday night in the city's well-to-do Central West End neighborhood. Mr. McCloskey could be heard yelling while holding a long-barreled gun, the AP describes it. It appears to be a Colt AR-15 A2 style, right? Micah, is that right? It's an A2.
Looks about right, yeah.
McCloskey tells KMOV-TV that he and his wife are personal injury lawyers, so they probably got billboards somewhere, and they were facing an angry mob on their private street and feared for their lives Sunday night. No charges brought against them. Police say there might be an investigation. Ooh. However, Circuit Attorney Kimberly Gardner issued a statement today characterizing what happened differently and saying her office was working with police to investigate the confrontation. She says, quote, and this is great, "I am alarmed at the events that occurred over the weekend where peaceful protesters were met by guns and a violent assault. We must protect the right to peacefully protest, and any attempt to chill it through intimidation or threat of deadly force will not be tolerated." Question, real quick, just a quick question. If somebody yells at you, they're going to kill you and your dog and burn your house down, would we all agree that's where the peaceful part ends in the protest?
Yeah.
Is anybody going to disagree with that?
It definitely goes out the window.
Okay. Micah, you've seen the video. Yes. What do you rate this interaction? How did they handle themselves?
I think they handled it perfectly. The protesters are trespassing on private property. You know, they made it very clear you're not going to come on the property. I mean, they had every well-intentioned. I think they handled it the right way.
Is a defensive posture like that, is that the best idea, or do you stay inside and wait for them to come to the door? Tactically speaking, yeah.
You know, personally, if it were me, I would have at least stood by the door. Now, if they had started coming to the door, I would have probably stepped outside, let them know, hey, you know, this is not going to be a good situation if you start causing trouble here. And, you know, obviously, you know, with them standing out front there, the protesters, you can hear them in the video. They say, just keep moving.
Right. You know? The one guy is coming back and telling everybody.
Right. So obviously the presence of lethal force, you know, speaks enough for itself, you know? So I think they handled it the right way, you know, and I gotta give them credit too. You know, I don't know if these two individuals were ever in the military or have any really sort of intense training on firearms just to begin with. But
I'm gonna guess no. I don't even think it's a thin limb I'm on. I think it's like a oak branch. I'm standing out here telling you.
I wanted to come at this with a positive.
Being nice, and I appreciate it. No, you're right. You're right.
I mean, kind of like what you said earlier, I don't remember the last time I had to stand by my front door with a AR-15 and
right,
you know, and have to, you know, some protesters. So I think they handled it the right way. They were doing what they thought was right. You know, I'm glad it didn't escalate to anything worse than that. And just definitely given the posture and their firearms training.
Let me make it easier on you.
I'm trying to be really nice.
You are, okay? And I think that's the right thing because, listen, at the outset, I should have said, I think you're right. I think the one thing we're doing wrong as a community is people are somewhat poking fun at these people.
Oh, yeah.
And none of us know what that feels like. Like, who knows what it feels like to have a mob of people come down your street, say they'll burn your house down, threaten your wife, threaten your pet, whatever it may be, and then act as if you have to be so passive and understanding that they're dealing with something that's, by the way, totally manufactured. The whole idea is totally manufactured and made up. We all know this. There's nobody that's going to deny the fact that the Black Lives Matter movement, really, by the way, if I could say so, that wasn't you. Don't worry about it, Stump. Whatever just broke in the background, don't worry about it. If you've, I, you know what I started reading this week? To Die for the People. Is that right? I'm really bad sometimes when I start reading a book. To Die for the People. I want to make sure this is right. I'm really sorry. Yes, To Die for the People. This is Huey Newton's book. All right. And he was a radical, and he did not like white people. And he's the founder of the Black Panthers, essentially. And Black Lives Matter is very derivative of the Black Panther movement. Their demands are eerily similar. They're both Marxist communist movements. They're both violent and racist movements. So there's nothing new here to the movement itself. It is a manufactured oppression today. You could argue that Huey Newton had a leg to stand on because he's in the age of segregation. He's dealing with when there was real racism in the street. Racism perpetuated by people none of us have ever met, by the way. But not to digress too far. The point is this. I've never dealt with these violent people marching through my neighborhood, making violent demands to abolish the police, to hand over all government authority to them, to release all prisoners, to agree to not prosecute black people, et cetera, et cetera. It goes, right? So I don't know how I would handle it. So I ask you to think about if you're in this situation as a gun owner and you need to take a defensive posture, what say you on best tactics for that? Stay out of sight and lay in wait, right? Wrong? I mean, it worked. I guess you can't argue when it works, right? Like, yeah. You go out there and confront them, you know, face to face like that. Is that the right move?
Yeah, I mean, this situation could have gone several ways. You know, had they stayed inside and just kept quiet and turned the lights off, you know, maybe the protesters would have just, you know, passed their home. It didn't sound like they just passed their home because, you know, I'm seeing a picture of a broken gate on their actual property.
Yeah, they
for their
individual
lot.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, I mean, if it were me, I would, you know, and by the time, even if they were to wait inside, you know, ready to go, with the front door locked and everything, you know, by the time they're at the front door, you're kind of running out of options as to what you're going to do. Cause you got to think they're close to the front door. The protesters are close to the front door. You know, that situation can get really sticky pretty quickly. I think they handled it the right way. If it were me, I would have, you know, if I noticed they were making an attempt to come onto my property, yeah, I would have, you know, let them know what they were about to be met with.
Yeah.
And so I think they definitely handled it the right way. I think a lot of, and I got to, you know, give props to these folks, you know, these two individuals, you know, their tactics, their firearm safety training. They obviously didn't listen to that part of the safety video at the gun range, but you know, hey,
he's definitely flagging his wife a lot.
Yeah, I think they both
she's got her finger on the trigger.
Yeah, and yeah. Inside the trigger well pretty much the entire time. But yeah. You know, I got to give these two folks credit because you know they were ready to defend what they had
right.
worked for yeah. their entire lives, and they were ready to.
I mean, you got to do what you got to
yeah.
do.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you got a mob coming down the street. I'm not going to go outside, personally.
Absolutely.
I'm going to sit inside and wait, right? But you got to do what you find best for you at that time. And what they did worked. Like, sorry,
it
but
did.
What they did worked. And so we can Monday morning quarterback all we want, but at the end of the day, it worked.
Right. And at the end of the day, I feel like, you know, there will be always, you know, some select individuals within the firearms community that are, you know, just going to, you know, poke fun at these folks for, you know, their tactics and their...
And, yeah, and they haven't done crap. Those people haven't done
right.
jack squat
right.
to and protect their community. We have communities being burned to the ground. If you're making memes to make fun of these people, it's likely these other people, the agitators, have been in your community.
Mm-hmm.
What have you done? Nothing. Nothing. You've run your mouth. You've run your mouth, and now you're running it even more when people step outside, and that really, really puts a thorn in my flesh.
Exactly, and I think my point is here. You know, yeah.
Sorry.
They're. No, you're good. You know, their tactics weren't the best, but you know, and there will be the select individuals that poke fun at these folks for their tactics and everything. But you know, you know, those folks are the ones that, you're right, have not really done anything. They're just the internet trolls pretty much, you know, within the firearms community. But at the end of the day, I can, I admire their fighting spirit. They're willing to defend what was theirs. And,
there you go.
You know, that spirit alone, just right there. Now, I probably would not want to go into a heated combat, you know, fight with them. But that spirit, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, do or die.
Yeah.
Stumparooski, they show up in your neighborhood. Does it play out this way? What happens? And you saw the video. What are your takes on it?
I mean, I commend them for their efforts in their front yard. I mean, the problem that I see with, you know, the firearm community at times, it really is a community. Yeah, I haven't been heavily involved with it for a couple of years. As you have, I was explaining this to somebody earlier that was looking for a gun. You have three types of people. You have the housewife who wants a little, you know, .380 for her purse that you know, she can rack and be dainty with.
That's what that lady was.
That's what that woman is.
Literally.
That's what that woman is.
Is it a Bursa? Yeah. It looks like a Bursa. But it's not. It's got to be a Walther. He's holding a Colt.
That house was way too nice for that kind of gun.
Yeah, it's not a Bursa. It's probably a, what was the James Bond gun? PPK? Is that right?
Q.
PPQ?
K, no, it was a K.
Yeah, it was a K. All right, anyway, it's probably a Walther.
I'm a little rusty. I've been out of game for a while.
I think it's PK-380.
In the middle, you have people who enjoy guns, but who do not know they don't know trigger pull. They don't know, you know, they know enough to where this is good, this is bad, I like what I like. I like a Glock. I don't like a Smith. I like a Smith. I don't like a Glock. You have those people. Who, that's where I fall. And I was, like I said, I was heavily involved with it for a long time. Mm-hmm. Have a lot of stuff. Have a lot of opinion. As one of your, the other guy on this show, I'm a very big 6 Hour fan, and I will stand on that hill as long as he's not here. That they're the best firearms in the world.
That's right. They are,
Patrick. But
New Hampshire.
And then you have those guys.
The know-it-alls.
Right. Yeah. And, and to certain people who might work in, you know, the firearm sales industry, you have these people who come in, and what does this do? What is the trigger pull on this?
Right.
And some of these guys are, you know, fresh out of high school. They're looking for a job. They look at it and say, you squeeze it. Right. You know, and then, you know, but on the other end of that, you have people that are heavily involved in the firearm community on the other side of the counter, per se. And you have that lady looking for that 380, and you just can't sell it to her. And there's a block there.
Right.
And it's just the diehards don't have in this community, don't have the compassion for people that they should have, because they should want everybody to have a gun. They should be willing. Any diehard, if you can tell me what the trigger pull is with my on my Glock 19 with a ZevTec trigger in it, you should be able to help a new gun owner, a first-time gun owner, buy a gun, and you should be more than willing to help them. And that's where the gun community draws the line. It's almost, you know,
for some reason,
Revenge of the Nerd style. Like, you know, we're cool, you're not.
Yeah.
Get out, nerd. You don't... You don't know what this is?
Yeah. You know, sorry, Chris.
No, go ahead.
No, I think this is a great opportunity for the firearms community just to really, you know, be in support with these people's actions, the motive behind their actions. Because, yeah, they might not be the best, you know, firearms, you know.
They're definitely not Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
From a tactical standpoint, yes, they are not Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Yeah. But, you know, my thinking here is, okay, you know, these folks, I think their spirit and their motive is what really should speak to a lot of the, you know, most of the firearms community and the members within the community that can't see that and just want to poke fun at them. They're missing the entire point completely. Okay.
Yeah.
Because there could be other folks out there that are, you know, kind of on the border, like, you know, I'm not really comfortable with firearms. I don't really know how to operate them. You know, I haven't been to the range much, you know. This could be an opportunity to either really encourage them, or it could completely crush their entire thoughts motivation on firearms and motivation completely to defend their own property. So, you know, my stance on it, you know, I admire what they did, you know, and I think it's a great opportunity for the firearms community to come in to support, to give their support, not break them down, not beat them down for, yeah, okay, they're obviously not, you know, a tier one operator type.
Right. And you don't have to be, you know,
right.
You don't have to be. Owners become advocates. Right.
Right.
And that's what we need more of. We need people to own firearms, to love their firearms, and to advocate for the understanding of why it's so important. Does anyone think it's a coincidence that the people burning your cities down right now are telling you to defund your police department? How naive could you possibly be? They're doing it on purpose.
You'd be surprised.
They want to. Oh, it's so sad. They want to ruin everything about the way we live, and they want to build it from scratch. And you mentioned earlier about the young lady you talked to who, we need another civil war. We need the last thing anybody would want is to lose the wonder of what we've created here. Think about the day they turn off running water. Think about the day the internet goes down. Nobody wants to lose that. Nobody wants a war. Nobody wants a fight over anything. So we have to maintain law and order. And I think you maintain law and order at the most base level. They come onto your property. They come to your home. You meet them with force.
Well, they're not protesters.
You meet them with law and order. That's right.
They're criminals.
That's absolutely. Well,
they're breaking the law.
Absolutely. And we did a whole episode here about the coming insurrection and the guidebook to overthrowing the government that these people are using. You can go back and listen to that. You can go read the rundown on our Facebook page. But the fact of the matter is, you're exactly right. They're not protesters. They are activists. They are opportunists. They are being paid to be out there, upset everything. And there's an end goal in mind. That end goal is upset our government, upset the police force, and implement your communist manifesto, as you will.
Unless you're in Greenville, then you protest the orange juice place.
Good. What a bunch of morons. What a bunch of morons. The man, all right, if you don't know, so Big Orange is what it's called.
And that's
right?
It's called Tanner's Big Orange. And the only reason I brought this up is because I had a hankering. I haven't had a drop of anything but water,
yeah,
except for an occasional ice cold Bud Light during this recording. And today I said, I want some of that juice they have. I want some. I rode by there, couldn't get in the parking lot.
Oh, and really?
No, they have closed? The entrances blocked. You couldn't turn in.
With what, people, or what are we talking about?
With signs, chants.
Today?
Yes.
They're still out there.
And then what fuels the fire is the Greenville News. They do a great deal. If it's not Clemson football or COVID, they don't write about it. But they decide that they are going to write an expose on Tanner's should close. Or these protesters are trying to close this place. That place has been, my mom told me today, she walked, when she went to Beck Middle School, when it was right behind it, they cut through the parking lot. That place has been there since at least the 70s in that location.
And all he did was say he wasn't going to get on his knees and bow down to black people. What is the problem? Black people should go, who cares? Who asked you to do that? And then he can go, well, I saw a video of these radical black people on Facebook. And black people should go, that's not us. Why would you think that's us? And he goes, well, it's just everywhere. And then they can go, stop believing everything you see on the internet. And he can go, my bad. And then it's over. It's over.
That sounds like common sense. And, right. You know, God forbid.
And what I don't understand is that building's paid for.
Yeah.
That man could let that building sit there until it rots and falls over, and he will probably be okay. He's an elderly man, I believe.
Yeah. He's like a third generation at this point.
He has
right?
sold enough hot dog and orange juice to pay the bills over there.
Yeah.
He can do what he wants at this point. He is just going to ride the lightning out.
I just don't get it.
I have never been more infuriated today that I could not go get my specialty orange juice.
It's such an amazing thing. There's nobody out there, nobody that I have found, who is outraged over the fact that there are groups of black people having white people bow down and kiss their feet. There's nobody out there talking about the perverse misinterpretation of the washing of the disciples' feet that these white people in North Carolina are doing for black people. There's nobody out there who's willing to say, you cannot take racism, reverse it, and have it not be equally racist. You can't suddenly pretend like, because black people 200 years ago were mistreated, or 50 years ago were mistreated, we must downtrodden and mistreat white people of today in order to break even. Two wrongs do not make a right. And I don't understand why we're doing everything we can to tear each other apart, when really what you have here is a great opportunity to come together, and you can look at the facts of the matter, and the black community, to a large degree, should be willing to have a conversation about why they disproportionately kill each other, why they disproportionately kill police officers, why they disproportionately abort their children. They should be able to, and willing to, have these honest conversations. But instead, everything is made into this. If a white person says something that the media wants to latch on to, that black, a small contingency of black people will disagree with, then that person's over. It's ruined. It's done. It's over. Rather than coming together and finding common ground and saying, okay, if there is injustice and if there is abuse by a system, we want to know what it is so we can weed it out. Because there's nobody out there is advocating for police officers to disproportionately target black people. There's nobody out there that's asking that police officers go out and disproportionately target minorities. There's nobody asking for any of that. But there is a disproportionate amount of crime committed. There's a disproportionate representation when you run the actual numbers. Look, I know we said it before. 93% of the time, if you die, the person looked like you, right? And you probably knew him. That's crazy to think about. 93% of murder victims knew the person that killed them. That's crazy. It's crazy. So it's the same thing with COVID, right? It's how I feel about COVID. All right, so COVID, we have the entire population of the country, and you have what percentage affected by COVID? Anybody know? Less than one. Less than 1% affected. Of that less than 1% affected, how many have died? Anybody? Less than 5%. So you have less than 5% of less than 1%, right? It's the same way with this. When you run the numbers and you look at 10 million police interactions in a year, and that's not a made-up number. That's not arbitrary. It's 10 million, okay, in 2018. How many black men were unarmed and killed by police? Out of 10 million interactions, 9, right? A very, very small number. So then you examine those and you go, okay, how many of them reached for the officer's gun? There's a few, okay? How many of them violently resisted? Well, there's a few, okay? Is there some justified rage against maybe an innocent life being taken? Possibly, but that story is hardly there. George Floyd is an example. That guy didn't need to die. That knee didn't need to be on the neck for 9 minutes. That's unbelievable. But there's also nobody out there saying that was okay. Nobody says that was okay. Nobody says that was okay. And then you have a guy in Greenville, South Carolina, come out and go, hey, just so y'all know, I'm not taking a knee to anybody. I'll kneel to God, but I'm not kneeling to any man. And suddenly that's a racist idea. How is that? How are we in a day and age where that is possibly a racist idea, where black people are willing to show up and shut down a business because a white man said he won't kneel to them?
People just want to be angry about something. And honestly, it's a huge cry for help, in my opinion.
To a degree, it is. Now, he did, I do have to say, I would be remiss to not mention, he did like double down with some weird comments about, we could give them our wives.
Yeah, I think he threw a few cut comments in there. It's kind of like,
Once they started coming for him, he got a little angry and started saying things that were really weird. But the premise of it, the beginning of it all, is just kind of like, I don't know, man. Can we go after a guy for saying he's not going to kneel?
The other night, I watched a comedy special. It was Bert Kreischer. Do you know who Bert Kreischer is? Well, just a backstory on him. Have you ever seen Van Wilder, the movie?
Long time ago, yeah.
Van Wilder is based on Bert Kreischer. He was at Florida State for like 8 years.
Okay.
He's a comedian now. He's friends with Joe Rogan, Tom Segura. And he was in Greenville the other night. He said, just so you know, welcome to South Carolina. I'm a bleeding heart liberal. I don't care. We're all going to be friends. And I'm going to tell this story first. And he went to a Starbucks. And he said there was a black guy waiting on him, a black teenager. He said, how do you want your He said, "How do you want your coffee?" He said, "Like the police is going to pull me over for no reason." Said the kid went nuts. So he tells this joke, and the preface to the joke is that you can get somebody like me, a bleeding heart liberal, who will be so offended for somebody else, they will be willing to cause a scene. He said, so the next day I go back, he said something else, the same thing to him. The next day he goes back, and he tells the joke that he said, "Yo, I know you, man. You Joe Rogan's friend. Yo, him and Tom Segura's funny." He said, "You laugh at your own jokes. You ain't funny." And so he said, "Okay, kid." So he went and bought a coffee every day for like a week. He said, the last day he went in there, he said, the kids were gathered around. He said, "How you want your coffee, sir?" He said, "Don't want it to know its father." And he winks. He said the kid falls on the floor laughing, and said the woman beside him, just with that liberal art confidence, turns around and said, "What did you say to him?" And he said, "And that's what's wrong with this country."
Yeah, that's right.
He said,
that's
right. And I was like, well, if a bleeding heart California liberal can come in this room full of now 40 that holds 100 that's got 45 people in it and can make sense and bring everybody together, I mean, it's possible to do if people would just
get over it.
Get over it.
Get over it, man.
Twitter is the worst thing that's happened. Ever.
Social media
not
in general.
Not only get over it, but just get over themselves, too. There's a lot of selfishness involved in just this whole... I mean, everyone's guilty of it to a degree, but...
Whoa,
I mean,
racist. Not me. I'm totally clean.
Yeah. No. I don't agree. Some stuff, it's just getting...
It's like this. So, I have a good black friend, and I'll leave his name out of it in case he doesn't want to be talked about, but I know he listens. Every time we talk, every time, the jokes are stereotypes. He came into where I work at a gun store and put both hands on the counter and asked for me. He asks for me, and a guy comes back to my office and goes, "Hey, there's a guy here waiting for you." Okay, and I wasn't expecting him. I walked out to see who it was. There he is, big black guy. And he's got both hands up on the counter, and he's looking panicked. He's looking all around him. And I go, "What are you doing?" He goes, "It's a bunch of white dudes with guns. Just want to make sure they know I'm not doing anything." Like that. And we laugh about it, right? Like, we laugh about it. And that's his humor. And I enjoy that humor. And he makes, if he were white and he made the jokes about black people that he as a black man makes about white people, everybody would call him racist. But I enjoy it. As a white man, I think it's hilarious. Like, I hate to tell you this because it'll offend people. I love stereotype humor. I just think it's so funny because I think it's so absurd. Like, to me, absurd humor is funny. Things that would never actually happen, but when you take it to its most absurd conclusion, it becomes hilarious, and you can think about it. You can laugh about these things, and you should be free of any restraint in that. You should be able to get together and just mock and joke and laugh because, honest to God, what else is there? Like, what else are you going to do except what is happening to us right now in public? You sit around and you take it way too seriously, you start burning each other's house down, or you get together and you go, "Man, this is stupid, that's stupid. I think the Confederate flag is stupid, doesn't make sense. I think this is stupid that these people do and that person does whatever." It's just this crazy time of now you have to wonder. You ever stop to take stock of the times you've been discriminated against and then thought, was I actually discriminated against or was I just being sensitive? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I know there's been times. I remember standing in a pre-shift meeting. I'd been hired to work at a place called Buffalo's on Haywood Road. Anybody remember Buffalo's? Not Buffalo Wild Wings. It was called Buffalo's.
It's a hookah lounge now, isn't it?
It's a hookah lounge.
It's right beside the Coliseum.
Yes.
Yeah, right across the street from Camp I.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
I remember that.
It was on exactly where that is.
Jeez, you're old.
I am old. It was on Haywood Road. I had just moved back from Columbia, South Carolina, and I was looking for work. As I was in Columbia, I had started bartending and bar backing at Jillian's in the Vista. Now, when you're 22, at Jillian's, I started realizing you can make $150 to $200 a night bartending. Again, this is nearly 20 years ago when rent was $300, right? So $150 to $200 a night, you're paying your rent every night almost? Come on, man. Who doesn't want to do that? So I came back to Greenville, and I thought I'd find a job there, and I went and interviewed for a job, and this guy interviewed me, the GM there. He said, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "I'd like to bartend. I want to bartend." And he said, okay, we're going to be looking for a bartender soon because, ironically, the bartender named Chris is leaving. And so if you have experience, we'd love to bring you on board. They made me take a bartender's test. I had to take a test that showed all the ingredients of all the different drinks and pass it before I could be hired on. I pass the test. I get hired on. I go into rotation. I'm waiting. I think Chris is going to be leaving, and I'll be bartending. I go in. I don't know. I've been working there a couple weeks maybe. And a guy named Steve was the shift manager that day. And Steve holds the pre-shift meeting, and he says, hey, if anybody knows someone that's looking to bartend, Chris is leaving, and we're looking for a bartender. And I go, oh, yeah, I talked to Todd about that when I interviewed. I'm pretty sure I'm going to move to the bar. I'm just learning the menu right now. And I kid you not, Steve goes, all right, no guys. We need a girl, good-looking girl. If anybody knows a good-looking girl. And I was like, for real? And he goes, yeah, no, we're not putting any guys behind the bar. They don't bring the money in like the women do. And so I never went back. Like, that was my solution. I went back once to get my check because they wouldn't give me my check. They sat on my check. I had to take my dad with me to go get my check, which was another story in and of itself. But I remember that. And I always think about that when people complain about, well, I was discriminated against. It happens to everybody. Some people are just a-holes. And that's the way it is. Like, sorry. It's just the way of the world. Steve was a white guy. I'm a white guy. Steve just had, you know, his way of doing things. He wanted a girl behind the bar. Illegal? Absolutely. Am I going to pitch a fit about it? No, I'm just going to go somewhere else and work somewhere else, right? And obviously, Buffalo's doesn't exist anymore, so the market wins, right? Like, it wins out. My point is, I guess, that we could all sit down, take inventory, and be bitter and angry about those things, or we could choose to just make better of ourselves, move on, move forward, and really get the hell over it to a degree.
True.
That's it. Right? I think so. Okay. Stumpy, did I leave anything out that you wanted to say? We've been here a long time. I think it's the longest podcast in Felt Recoil history. Largely due to you.
I think I'm good.
Your amazing storytelling skills.
I think I'm good.
Which are pretty fantastic.
I think I'm good. You're stop impressive. Protesting my orange juice and raise hell, praise Dale.
All right. We want to give a shout out to Netflix for being our VODA of the week. If you don't know, VODA is a firearms trainer who doesn't know squat about training people with firearms, but somehow he's still out there and people are still paying him. It's crazy. So anytime anybody does something dumb, we make them our VODA of the week. And this week it's Netflix. They give Colin Kaepernick, they're going to do a 6-part series. Can we fly off the cuff with this, Stump? I know you can. Mike, are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Let's talk about what the 6 episodes would be about. They're giving Kaepernick 6 episodes to talk about his life. Okay. I'm going episode number 1, we meet his white parents. And the world realizes Kaepernick was raised with white privilege.
His white adopted parents, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But still, white privilege.
True.
Okay? And what are these racist people doing adopting a black boy? Since white people are
racist.
Episode 2, what would it be?
Oh.
Did anybody here follow Kaepernick's career in the NFL?
I did.
I followed a little bit.
So, as Alex Smith was the quarterback in front of him. I think it was Alex Smith.
I think so, yeah. Where'd he go? Kansas?
Yeah, he went to Kansas City. They shipped him out of there. He had bad years, and he's never been a consistent guy. And they brought in Kaepernick, and he was the first quarterback. Well, Michael Vick was the ultimate quarterback to do that. But can't talk about him either.
Right. For much worse reasons.
I'm just kidding. Michael Vick served his time. I love Michael Vick. Just don't let the guy have a puppy.
Hey, you know what? I'm actually a fan of that. I agree with that. If you go and you serve your time, you make amends to society, come on back.
I'm a very big Virginia Tech guy. I love Michael Vick.
He did his part.
He did his time.
That was cheap. Don't worry about it. That didn't cost me.
So Kaepernick steps in and they bring a college offense to the NFL.
Right.
That nobody really knows how to stop an RPO, run pass option, in the NFL.
You're back to the Greek we talked about with the
means you can means if you don't see an option to throw the ball, you hand the ball off, or the quarterback takes off and runs, which he's really good at. And then
I thought World of Warcraft, just to be very clear.
And then
I heard RPG.
And then when Colin got to the Super Bowl against his coach's brother, who knew what he was doing, he didn't win that Super Bowl. He almost won that Super Bowl, but he didn't.
Kaepernick made it all the way to the Super Bowl?
Kaepernick went to a Super Bowl with the 49ers.
What's he whining about? Good for him.
Well, he lost it. But
oh, I see.
Sucks to suck. And then after that, he was like the little yodel man from the Price is Right. Yodel, 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 yodel. And then he fell off because people figured out how to stop it. And he wasn't a great quarterback. He went to Nevada.
Gotcha.
He didn't go to UNLV. He didn't get to go to Las Vegas. He had to go to Reno. That's how That's how big the gap is.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess his second episode should be, I probably should have played baseball. Because
Michael Jordan makes a guest appearance.
No, he was a very successful baseball player.
Kaepernick was?
Yeah, he threw in the high 90s. He was a baseball player.
He was a pitcher then?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Do you know that?
Wasn't Russell Wilson also a baseball player?
Wilson's still on the not this year, but he was in spring training. He's on the Yankees spring training roster.
Really?
He goes to spring training with the Yankees
not
every year.
Not the guy from Run DMC. What Russell Wilson are we talking
Yankees
about?
Yankees or Seattle?
No, the Yankees. He's a member of the, he got drafted by Texas, and then Texas traded him, and then Texas just didn't re-sign him because he'll never play baseball. But
right.
They say he could play AA, AAA ball, but he is a member of the New York Yankees organization.
Wow.
They own his baseball rights.
Episode 3, speaking of baseball, I think should be a guest appearance by Tim Tebow, in which he talks about the fact that people don't care if you're persecuted by professional sports for your beliefs if you're white. Because we all remember how that went. Yep. Like, there's a guy who we can argue all day whether he was good at the sport or not. I don't know because, like I said, I don't watch sports. But you cannot argue that the man was persecuted for his personal beliefs and then hung it up. And by the way, let me make a point. I'm sorry. I keep kind of putting my hand up in your face. Let me make a point that I'm so glad, and I mean this legitimately, I'm so glad that the sports world shunned Tim Tebow because the amazing things he is doing with his foundation could not have been done had his mind been elsewhere.
They haven't shunned him.
So I'm so glad. Well, you know what I mean, though. Like,
pro football. He's a triple A baby. Yeah. He'll probably make it to the major leagues in baseball.
I hope he does.
I hope he does, too. But Tim Tebow is the greatest college football quarterback of all time. Colin Kaepernick was much better in the league than Tim Tebow was.
You think?
Yeah, Tim Tebow couldn't start a food fight.
Oh, really? He played for the Broncos when he got in? Tebow go? Yeah? Okay.
The Broncos and then the Jets.
I harbor no notions at all about sports knowledge, so you're not going to offend me if you say somebody wasn't good. I don't know, but I'm glad he's been able to do what he's done.
Oh, he's done great things.
Is it called Let Your Light Shine Foundation, I believe is what it's called, where he does those nights out for kids with special needs. And he read a letter recently that a mom wrote him where she talked about she spent her whole life telling everybody, don't forget my girl. Don't forget my girl, because they would leave her out of it. Oh, it's a tearjerker, but it's really, really good. So I'm happy he's been able to do what he's done. Okay, so that's episode 3. Tim Tebow shows up and he goes, hey, nobody cares if the sports world persecutes you for your beliefs, unless you're you. And then Kaepernick can come back in. He can be like, yeah, me. All right. So that's episode 3. 4, what are they going to do with the 4th of 6 episodes?
Stick him on the bench.
I'm guessing make him work out in front of everybody, right?
Yeah, well,
do the combine.
Well, when he,
which one?
Well, yeah, which one? He,
yeah, his.
He got sat on the bench, and then he had. Then he started protesting, and he got released because he was a waste of money.
Right.
And then he protests. He starts this whole big thing. Him and Eric Reed protest together. They're the first two that took a knee. And Eric Reed's not that great either.
Right.
Colin Kaepernick is the face of it. Eric Reed is his hanger-on. Eric Reed gets signed to go play pro football. And the only thing he does is advocate for Colin Kaepernick to come back. Then Eric Reed gets cut from the Panthers, which he was a complete liability for anyway. He was a waste of money. And now it was a race thing by the league. It wasn't the fact that he was just not a very good safety.
No.
Yeah.
No kidding.
And then well, somewhere in there, there's a shining light in this episode because Colin Kaepernick gets a very nice Nike endorsement for doing nothing.
Right. Yeah.
And then yeah. and then he gets a combine set up for him by the league, and then he turns his nose up at it and says, well, no, I don't want to sign your waiver. This is not right. And just abandons the whole thing. Instead of going from a pro facility, he decides to go work out for seven people at a high school facility an hour away from where they try to get him back to the league.
Hmm.
That could be episode six. And episode five.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, along that lines, there's a whole undertone there of how Kaepernick had all sorts of opportunity, right, to go and at least try. And he continually thumbed his nose up at it. Continually thumbed his nose, right?
32 teams were going to show up at that combine. It was arranged. Not all the big wigs were coming because they had games the next day. They were going to do it at the Falcons facility. An ex-head coach was going to run it. And an ex-offensive coordinator, very respected people, were going to run it. And they said, and then that day, they get there. And Jay-Z, mm-hmm. the rapper, he helps facilitate all of this.
Right.
Helps mend the bridge there. And Kaepernick.
Because he's a partial owner in one of the NFL teams now, right? Jay-Z? He bought into somebody.
No.
Jay-Z didn't?
No, he can't. He owns a sports agency.
Really?
He owns Rock Nation Sports.
So it fell apart.
Yeah.
Am I missing that?
He connected with the NFL to help try to bridge the alliance. And then that morning, Colin Kaepernick says, nope, your waiver's wrong. It's not going to hold up my liability. It's special just for me in case something happens to me. I'm going to get hurt. You're going to make sure I get hurt. I'm not coming. And so they abandon, and he decides that he's going to go work out at a high school on his own. They're going to host it, and instead of 32 teams being there, 7 teams showed up, and he did not impress.
Right.
And it was
he's a little lackluster.
And then when they said to the reports they read, it was 7 teams that didn't need a quarterback. They were just there. Just
being nice.
They were just there to be there.
Hmm. The Nike thing is interesting to me because what I think episode 6 could be, now that we've got our 5th, would be how Kaepernick is nothing but a racist capitalist exploiter. Because Kaepernick and Nike took such advantage and exploited black youth to such a degree, it's really phenomenal. Because Nike saw a great business opportunity, and so they swoop in. And they go, I'll tell you what, we'll do some shoes for you, right? Like, you know, like the Betsy Ross shoes? We'll do some shoes for you. And so then they do shoes with Kaepernick. And what does Nike know? Nike knows that middle-aged white men don't buy their shoes.
Right.
Fact of the matter. I mean, does anybody in this room wear Nike? Like, do any of us seek Nike out specifically? Micah, do you buy Nike shoes specifically? No? Buy the right shoes for the right job?
Shoe. I have New Balance. I mean, I have New Balance. I have Under Armour. I have Nike.
Old man. Yeah.
I'm a very big Yeezy guy, very big Kanye West fan. We can do
but
that
Nike
on the
knew
next
what they
episode.
Were doing. Yeah, Nike's no slouch, yeah. right? And so they come in, they go, all right, we'll take it. So this is great exploitation of the black community, and they never even know. They put their fist in the air, and they act like, oh, Nike's great, so we'll buy all their stuff to show solidarity, and Nike laughs all the way to the bank. Right. But you know, can't blame anybody involved.
I hope the ending to chapter 6 would be that this year he gets picked up by somebody who needs a backup quarterback. And yeah. then I don't hope their quarterback gets severely injured, but it's a mild ankle sprain. Let and then Colin himself. Kaepernick gets to go back into a game, and we can finally say
he just wasn't good.
He might be great, might be good. He's not good enough to be a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
He's not.
Yeah.
He wasn't. That's why he got put on the bench for somebody who's no longer in the league.
Why he took a knee, right?
Right.
He wasn't getting the attention he thought he deserved. Right. His parents must have spoiled him pretty rotten, and then he knew he needed his attention. What's a better way to do it? You take a knee during the national anthem, make everybody ask why, and then make something up about, well, this is a racist country that still, you know, right. Persecutes me and the people that look like me and all wear socks with pigs on them dressed as cops.
And then make millions off of it.
Millions. You're exactly right. Millions and millions. Stump, thanks for hanging out. was a good time as always.
Always glad to be here. Can't wait to do it again.
You're home.
I've got to keep these appearances up.
You look good.
You better.
I will.
Mr. Micah, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Watch for Micah on the YouTube channel and on the blog as well at FeltRecoilShow.com. We hope you will catch your new episodes every Tuesday, wherever you like to get your podcast. Do you have something else?
You need a TikTok.
TikTok a felt for Felt Recoil?
A Felt Recoil. We could do a Felt Recoil TikTok, and then we could take Micah and we could do Felt Recoil Goes to the Races.
That could be fun.
There we go.
I'll tell you what.
I'll be your field court.
Give me like 10 minutes after I turn this off and you explain how TikTok works.
Yeah, I'm very interested.
I don't either.
I
just like watching people make an ass out of themselves on there.
Like, what is there outside of people dancing to songs and lip syncing songs? Like, I get it to a degree, but it all, I'll tell you that here's how I feel about it. If the people that I see doing it right and creatively, it's taking a lot of effort to get that 10-second video out there. What value do I gain from that? I really don't understand. Like, the return of investment there is, it seems minimal, but I don't know. I'm all ears, man. I'm all ears.
We'll make it work.
Love you. Thanks for being here. All right.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week for another episode of the Felt Recoil Podcast.